Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is March 31, 1982, and this is my audio letter 73. For the past several days, two news stories have been competing for top billing here in the United States. One is the conflict in El Salvador surrounding national elections, which were held on Sunday 3 days ago. The other is the third space shuttle mission, which ended yesterday. On the face of it, these two headline events would seem to have little in common. The brutal civil war in the jungles of Central America seems part of a different world from that of America's newest spaceship. But the fact is that these two news stories are related to one another. El Salvador and the space shuttle are both involved in the complex program leading up to Nuclear War I. El Salvador is just one hot spot in the growing cauldron of deliberate world crises to bring on war. And the space shuttle is being used for secret military preparations for war itself. In audio letter 72 last month, I reported that the war timetable of America's Bolshevik planners is being speeded up. If their plans succeed, the time left before the outbreak of all-out nuclear war is measured in months. And so far, my friends, their plans are succeeding. All around the world, the flames of crisis are continuing to spread. In Central America, the initial crisis in El Salvador has now expanded to include Nicaragua, Honduras, and Guatemala. On the day after Space Shuttle 3 took off this month, a military coup took place in Guatemala, and we haven't seen anything yet. Soon, we will be hearing of new threats to our lifeline through the Panama Canal. And the Carter administration's giveaway of the canal does not become final for nearly 20 more years. As of now, the canal remains a potential new Pearl Harbor for us. Overseas, other crises are also continuing to simmer and spread. In Iran, the plans for a new explosion of turmoil are right on track. New developments in the Iran-Iraq war are paving the way for this. Another factor, as I have previously reported, is to be the revelation that Ayatollah Khomeini is dead. Early this month, there were harbingers of things to come in the news, especially overseas. For example, on March 6, the BBC quoted a London Times article questioning whether Khomeini is still alive. The article expressed suspicions that fake pictures are now being used, showing a double for Khomeini. Another simmering crisis is the contrived flap between the United States and Libya. For the moment, it's on the back burner. But the Libya crisis is one of the time bombs which the Bolsheviks here can use to help set off a big war to come. In that regard, there were two major developments this month which went almost unnoticed in the news, and they are synchronized perfectly with the overall war timetable that I made public last month. First, on March 3, Libya's Colonel Gaddafi drew a line in the dust against the United States. In Tripoli, the Libyan capital, Gaddafi delivered a fiery speech to listeners gathered for a rally. He reminded them of the Nimitz episode last August, when two Libyan jets were shot down. And he said, quote, "If America enters the Gulf of Sidra, war in the full sense of the word will begin between us and them, war with planes, navies, missiles, everything," unquote. Within 2 weeks, the United States promised, in effect, that it will soon walk across Gaddafi's line in the dust. On March 16, Navy Secretary John Layman declared that the United States will conduct naval exercises again within the Gulf of Sidra, and we will do so within the next 6 months. Layman's statement was a virtual promise of war to come. It was reported that day by the BBC, but went unnoticed here in America. Crises within the Soviet bloc are also continuing. The war in Afghanistan continues to drag on, thanks to ongoing heavy involvement by the CIA. Poland, too, is an explosion waiting to happen. Martial law has removed the spark for that explosion by jailing the leaders of Solidarity. Solidarity was the main tool of the American Bolsheviks in trying to set off a revolt in Poland. But soon the Bolshevik war planners here expect to provide a new spark for revolt in Poland. Last fall, the Bolsheviks here reestablished the covert influence within the Vatican, which they held briefly 3 years ago. Now the Bolsheviks here are trying to revive their old plan called the Pope's Revolution to occur in Poland. I gave the details of the original plan in Audio Letter 42. It was built around a planned papal visit to Poland on a highly emotional occasion, the 900th anniversary of the martyrdom of St. Stanislaus. The original Pope's Revolution plan was foiled by changing the date of the Pope's visit, but now a new papal visit to Poland may be in the works. The occasion is the 600th anniversary of the Black Madonna, the most revered shrine in Poland. The anniversary takes place this summer, my friends, less than 6 months from now. In addition to the existing crises, new crises are also being stirred up, with more to come. These will be developing in both East and West. Right now, a major new crisis is building up between two NATO members, Greece and Turkey. The new government of Greece wants to extricate itself from the war maneuverings of the Bolshevik-controlled United States and NATO. Washington is responding with military blackmail. Turkey's harsh military dictatorship has designs on sea and land controlled by Greece, and the United States is egging them on. Bulgaria and Romania, Soviet bloc neighbors of Greece and Turkey, are also targeted for turmoil soon. American Bolshevik agents are hard at work there to create a serious dispute between these two Warsaw Pact members. If they succeed, it will be just one more Poland-style headache for Russia's new anti-Bolshevik rulers. The American Bolsheviks here are pressing ahead fast in their efforts to bring on nuclear war one. In this, they are joined by their Zionist partners in Israel. In Audio Letter 67, I described the joint military junta which today controls the actions of both the United States and Israel. The Reagan-Begin axis is moving the world steadily closer to nuclear war. Neither government is making the slightest effort to act in the true best interests of its own citizens. This situation is a secret in both countries. It's as much a mystery to most Israelis as it is to most Americans. In both countries, there is growing alarm over the lockstep toward war. Here in America, this is taking the form of mounting demands for a nuclear weapons freeze. In Israel, the Begin government is facing repeated no-confidence votes over its repressive policies toward Palestinians. But both governments are bent on war, and they expect to bring it about before they can be stopped. The present Begin government repression in the occupied Arab territories have been calculated with care. They are intended specifically to shatter the shaky Middle East peace. For one thing, Israeli repression of Palestinians within their jurisdiction is intended to stir up PLO activity in southern Lebanon. In addition, Israel's suspension of political rights for Arabs in the occupied territories is a violation of the Camp David Accords. Instead of negotiating increased autonomy for the Arabs, the Begin government is taking away what little autonomy they already had. These things are intended to produce a chain reaction of events, that is, PLO raids on Israel, an Israeli invasion of Lebanon, war between Israel and Syria, creating a proxy battle between America and Russia, disintegrating peace ties between Israel and Egypt, an incident in the Sinai involving America's buffer troops there, ensnarement of Saudi Arabia in the collapsing peace, on and on, wider and wider, seemingly out of control. All these artificial crises are leading fast toward nuclear war one, and when it comes, the Bolsheviks here plan to be ready. For the first time, the space shuttle has been successful in its secret military mission. Even more importantly, their most ambitious crash weapons project is now bearing fruit. My friends, the United States has developed a new super weapon, as revolutionary as the atom bomb was four decades ago. My three special topics for this audio letter are Topic number 1, the new phantom warplanes of the United States. Topic number 2, Project Z, the three-phase strategy for nuclear war 1. And Topic number 3, the first military success of the space shuttle. Topic number 1. On December 6, 1941, President Franklin D. Roosevelt authorized the spending of funds to begin a super-secret weapons project. Its goal? To develop a giant bomb so powerful that it would make all lesser weapons obsolete overnight. It was the beginning of what was later called the Manhattan Project. The project was intended to develop a bomb to fight a war that did not yet exist. But the very next day, December 7, 1941, Pearl Harbor took care of that. Just one day after the A-bomb project began, America was at war right on schedule. The Manhattan Project to develop the atomic bomb was the largest, most complex, and most costly military project in history up to that time. And yet, it was conducted in total secrecy. The money spent on the atom bomb project dwarfed all other weapons programs, yet it was spent without the knowledge of Congress. Entire new laboratories were built. Thousands of people were involved. And yet, fewer than 100 persons knew what the Manhattan Project was all about. The Manhattan Project was to develop a super weapon, something straight from the pages of science fiction. If most people had been asked, they would have said that an atomic bomb was impossible. But in matters like this, public opinion counts for nothing at all. A small handful of scientists knew that it could be done. They did the seemingly impossible, and they did it in well under 4 years. The A-bomb project went from a standing start in December 1941 to the attack on Hiroshima in August 1945. My friends, I can now report for the first time that a new program like the Manhattan Project has been underway here in the United States. Like the atomic bomb 40 years ago, the new weapon sounds like something straight from the pages of science fiction. Like the Manhattan Project, the new project has been carried out in utmost secrecy. Vast amounts of money have been spent on it, without the slightest hint to the public or Congress. And just as happened with the atomic bomb, the new weapon is intended to make its debut in war itself, and not before. I first began reporting that crash weapons projects were being started here in the United States 4 years ago in Audio Letter 33. These projects were started in response to Russia's surprise military takeover of space in late 1977. From time to time since then, I've reported on the progress of a number of these secret programs to prepare for war. In Operation Desktop, ICBMs have been planted in supposedly invulnerable locations on the ocean floor. In the secret Minuteman TX mobile missile program, a large number of small ICBMs are now shuttling around the United States in special railroad cars. Meanwhile, the phony MX missile controversy has been used as a cover for this secret project. Then there is the high-power laser program, which has led to a number of laser weapons. And of course, there is the space shuttle program, a desperate attempt to regain a military toehold in space. While we are shown entertaining space movies on TV by NASA, we are never shown what is really happening on each flight. Never. I have given many details about these secret weapons programs in past audio letter reports. Now I have obtained urgent information about a crash military program which is shrouded in the deepest secrecy of all. It is an Air Force project involving technology which is as revolutionary today as the atomic bomb was 40 years ago. This secret superweapon project is the basis for an entire new nuclear war strategy of the American Bolshevik war planners. It is a renegade program totally unknown both to the public and to Congress. Even within the military, this weapons program is known only within very limited circles. You, my friends, will understand the reasons for this extreme secrecy when you hear how it is to be used in the coming war. I will reveal this master war strategy, codenamed Project Z, in topic number 2. Ever since the summer of 1980, there have been vague reports in the news about what is called the stealth bomber program. We're told that ways are being developed to make a bomber undetectable by radar. We're also led to believe that a stealth plane will not be operational until 1991. The fact is, my friends, that these are only cover stories to hide a far more radical weapons program. And it will be operational not in far-off 1991, but this year, 1982. The stealth program is structured very much like the Minuteman TX program, which I made public in audio letter 55. In the case of the Minuteman TX, public attention was focused on the alleged MX missile. And in fact, work is underway to develop a missile called MX. But all of that was set up primarily as a cover for the secret Minuteman TX program. It provided a way to camouflage research, development, and manufacturing of the TX. Now that the TX mobile missile system is virtually deployed on our railroads, the MX is gradually fading from the scene. The furious debate over all those ridiculous MX racetracks out west is gone, having served its purpose of distraction. And now there is talk of cutting out funding for the MX in the 1983 budget. Can you imagine? It's all very much the same with the stealth program. Various companies and laboratories are experimenting with ways to foil radar. These experiments include special aerodynamic shapes, coatings, electronic countermeasures, and so on. But all this is important mainly as a cover and a funding channel for the really secret work. One product of the covert stealth projects was called a submersible aircraft, or subcraft for short. I first described subcraft in audio letter 37, August 1978, when they were beginning flight tests. In January 1980, there was an attempt to actually use them against Russia, with disastrous results. The first public leaks about the stealth program took place 6 months later, in the summer of 1980. Up to that time, nothing better than the unsuccessful subcraft had been produced. But now the situation has changed. The biggest gamble of all in the stealth program has involved a scientific leap forward as dramatic as the atomic bomb, and it is succeeding. What I am about to reveal may sound impossible to some people. If so, just stop and think about the things that would have seemed impossible 40 years ago, which we take for granted today. Jet airplanes, worldwide television, men on the moon, local weather forecasts with satellite pictures of planet Earth, lasers, photocopy machines, frozen food, and computers. Think what a giant leap in technology was taken in the Manhattan Project to develop the atomic bomb 40 years ago. For example, there were no computers in those days. Even the most advanced scientific calculations had to be done by hand, with some help from slide rules, adding machines, and mathematical tables. By contrast, today you can go to a store and buy a hand calculator that will outperform anything that was available to the A-bomb project. And a hand calculator like that is a mere toy compared with the powerful high-speed computers that are common today. In other areas, too, the technology of the 1980s is a far cry from that of the 1940s. So just ask yourself, if we could develop the atom bomb using pencils and slide rules, what might we develop today using computers? And if it took less than 4 years with the primitive tools of the 1940s, why should a crash program today take any longer? The most secret branch of the stealth program, my friends, is developing aircraft that are invisible to more than just radar. They are invisible even to the eye. These invisible phantom warplanes carry special electromagnetic gear. The equipment includes superconducting magnets, which are maintained at temperatures close to absolute zero. This cryogenic equipment creates an enormously powerful electromagnetic field around the aircraft. The field is designed according to the principles of Einstein's unified field theory. Einstein never completely finished his unified field theory, but it has been studied by numerical techniques using computers. By this brute force method, enough has been learned to apply unified field theory to the new phantom warplanes. When the invisibility field is turned on, a phantom warplane is encased in a sort of electromagnetic bubble. Light that strikes the field from any direction divides, passes around the plane, comes together again on the other side, and goes on. The effect is like a boulder in a stream. Water flowing towards the boulder divides, goes around it, and then comes together again on the other side. To understand why this makes the plane invisible, stop and think how you see objects. Suppose you look across the room at a chair. Light bounces off the chair in a certain pattern, travels through the air, and strikes your eyes. Your eyes then recognize the light pattern as a chair. Now suppose someone walks between you and the chair. Light bouncing off the chair is stopped by the person who's in the way. So you no longer see the chair. Instead, you see the person by reflected light. Now, my friends, consider a new situation. Suppose that the person were encased in a special bubble like that of a phantom warplane. He steps between you and the chair. The light waves from the chair strike the bubble, flow around him, come together again, and continue to your eyes. So you still see the chair. But because of the bubble, no light is reflected back from that person, so you cannot see him. In other words, he is invisible. He is there, all right, between you and the chair, but because of the way the light behaves around his protective shield, you cannot see him. This is basically how the invisibility shield works on a phantom warplane. The only difference is that the field is not as sharply defined as a bubble. It is strong close to the plane and grows weaker with distance. From a distance, the plane is totally invisible when it is airborne. A phantom warplane is invisible to the eye and also to radar. Radar is like light, except for wavelength, and behaves the same way when it hits the invisibility shield. It just divides, flows past the plane, converges on the other side, and continues onward. It does not bounce back, so there is no radar return. Invisibility is the most striking feature of a phantom warplane, but it is not the most important. The greatest value of the invisibility field is its protection against beam weapons. A phantom warplane is totally immune to lasers because a laser beam is just intense light. The invisibility field also gives protection against Russia's charged particle beam. Charged particles are far easier to deflect than light, so the charged particle beam is no match for the light deflecting shield. That leaves only neutral beam weapons. Russia's neutron beam would penetrate the invisibility shield, but ways have been found to shield against neutron radiation well enough to make neutron beams ineffective in stopping a phantom warplane. That's especially true because extremely effective shielding is part of the basic design of a phantom warplane. Without it, the gigantic electromagnetic field, which produces invisibility, would derange electronic instruments, as well as the crew, if it is manned. So the net result is this, my friends. The new phantom warplane of the United States is not detectable by conventional means, and it is believed to be invulnerable to all of Russia's beam weapons. Those beam weapons have been the keys to Russia's military superiority since late 1977. So the phantom warplane is the ideal weapon to attack Russia. The phantom warplane has just one major drawback. In a way, its greatest strength is also its greatest weakness. When the invisibility field is turned on, incoming light waves do not strike the plane. Instead, the light flows around the plane, as I have explained. That is what makes the plane invisible to observers at a distance. But at the same time, the field prevents light waves from the outside world from reaching the cockpit of the plane. In other words, the pilot cannot see anything outside the invisibility field. He is required to fly blind. There is only one technique known in the West by which a phantom warplane can be navigated. It's called inertial guidance, a technique first invented for ICBMs a quarter century ago. In inertial guidance, a computerized system keeps track of all the forces and maneuvers experienced by the vehicle. By adding these up over time, the system calculates where it is without reference to the outside world. For a phantom warplane, the inertial guidance problem is very difficult. The guidance system must operate for as long as several hours while the plane flies to its target. That gives lots of time for errors to build up, which would send the plane off course. But the problem has been solved. New inertial guidance technology has been developed using lasers in place of the old mechanical gyros used on ICBMs. And so the super-secret phantom warplane project has succeeded in producing a new super weapon. It's as revolutionary today as the atomic bomb was nearly a half century ago. Prototypes are now flying, and a rush production program is already underway. The secret war planners here expect to have an operational fleet ready by this summer of 1982. This is now the pacing item in the short new war timetable, which I made public last month in Audio Letter 72. The secret new fleet of phantom warplanes are the key to a complete new Pentagon war plan, which I will reveal in topic number 2. This is why fresh reconnaissance data on Russian targets is so critical to the war planning here. When phantom warplanes take off to attack Russia, they will have to know ahead of time exactly where the target is. Flying blind on inertial guidance, they cannot look around and change course to find a target. For a year now, the space shuttle has been making a desperate attempt to obtain the needed target information from space. It would be the first new data since Russia destroyed our spy satellites 4 years ago. The first two shuttle flights were not successful in their secret military mission. But as I revealed last month, the American Bolshevik war planners in the Pentagon have scored an intelligence coup against Russia. And now, Space Shuttle 3 has been successful. The war planners here are now obtaining the most crucial target data needed for a phantom warplane attack against Russia. As a result, a whole new war plan is now being prepared for the coming nuclear war. America's war strategists are now eager for war because they now believe they can achieve victory over Russia. But, my friends, their concept of victory does not include you and me. The secret war strategists here are preparing to sacrifice America and most of her people on the altar of world domination.